Good morning, everyone, and welcome to CES 2017. I'm Steve Koenig.
And I'm Leslie Rohrbaugh.
We've got our presentation queued up. We're ready to go. Hopefully you've had your second cup of coffee and you're wide awake, and we'll hopefully be able to deliver a pretty good perspective this morning on the home entertainment landscape. Because my, how things have changed. Home entertainment and the various components and content types that are in have really changed over the past several years. We've seen really massive sea changes in the technologies involved, but also shifts in consumer behavior. And this is something that we're going to explore through the lens of our consumer research, also our industry forecasts. And it all really adds up to a lot of perspective that I think will prepare you and fortify you when you're out on the floor at CES and taking in the latest innovations in this home theater arena. So let's get started.
Right. So what are some of the top tech products that consumers are owning in the household? Well, we're seeing three screens: televisions, laptops, and smartphones, along with headphones and DVD Blu-ray players, are the most owned tech products in 2016. TVs remain the centerpiece in U.S. homes today, and as we'll see later, as content shifts to more screens, TVs still remain the most widely owned tech device. So 2016 self-reported household ownership of internet-enabled televisions and digital media streaming devices are really proving that streaming video technologies are gaining traction in U.S. homes. Additionally, the adoption of Bluetooth wireless headphones as well as Bluetooth-enabled speakers are showing that wireless shifts in the audio category. These trends were also seen in first-time household shoppers of these products. We see HD TVs, internet-enabled TVs, Bluetooth wireless headphones, digital media streaming devices are all topping the lists of the most anticipated first-time purchases of households in 2016. In terms of installed base, which is an estimate of the number of units owned in the U.S., the past 5 years saw a shift to mobile devices, smart and HD TVs, and a wireless shift to Bluetooth audio.
Yeah, and Leslie, I think this is a really interesting slide because you can see the changes over the past 5 years, and we have a lot of slides that show you a really long time series, and this is one of the great benefits of CTA market research is that we've been at this job for a long time. So we can really show you very clearly how these shifts in consumer behavior really transform the industry landscape from a device perspective, what they're buying, what they're installing in their homes. And like Leslie said, this shift to mobility, this is something we've been talking about for ages, it seems now, but also wireless. And that connectivity and wireless is a major narrative at the show this year, probably more than it ever has been. That's been an undercurrent for some time at CES, but I think you're going to see it even more pronounced. Some may call it the Internet of Things. I think that's a little blasé, but really specifically, wireless connections, connectivity really pronounced and omnipresent across that device spectrum. So this is very interesting and puts some more documentation to how installed bases and the products that people own have shifted along with technology innovation. Right. So let's commence with our video portion. We're going to kind of tennis match style go back and forth between video and audio as we describe a number of the trends that are present in that home entertainment landscape. And by the way, I want to mention that we're going to probably speak for about 45 minutes, and we should have some time for a question and answer. And we do have some mics positioned out there in the audience. So that's what, when we get to that period, that's your cue to come up to the mic and ask your question so everyone can hear, and then we'll endeavor to answer that. So again, let's start by orienting you to kind of the current state of TV, and I think these statistics provide ample documentation to really draw a line under what Leslie had said before about the TV remains the centerpiece technology in American households. One of the most interesting stats, I think, is that we have as many TVs as we do people in the United States, 320 million. So very robust ownership, and I think it just really proves the point that TVs are still king of the living room, if not the entire household. And we can kind of binge watch these seasons, but I wanted to just kind of, for some background, just describe to you the history of the DTV market over the past several years. Obviously, we had an introductory period, and that's when sales volumes, as we'll see in just a second, were very small indeed, but starting to ramp. Season two, that upgrade cycle, that's when people started to buy that flat panel, that HD display, probably 720, 1080p at that time was really the upsell, if you like. That's when we started to see volumes really ramp. And where are we now? Well, season three in the replacement cycle. So nowadays, a lot of consumers are coming back and replacing that flagship display that they procured during that upgrade brigade during 2006 to 2013 because they're looking for the new features that our industry has brought forward. Maybe it's 4K, it's probably smart TV, it's most definitely a bigger screen because, hey, as Americans, we can't help ourselves. We love big screens and we cannot lie. So we really want the biggest screen possible, don't we? And people will find very creative ways to shoehorn that 65-inch screen into that living room, whether their spouse likes it or not. But so this is some history. And looking forward to season four, this is what you're going to start to get a glimpse of when you're out and about in Central Hall and elsewhere at CES, is really this next gen and next leap. Of course, Samsung's already talking about with QLED and kind of that next innovation. And so I think some of these are incremental steps. Really and truly, though, I think OLED is that next move forward, but also potentially these video walls, wireless will probably play a role, and so forth. Also the flexible screens that you can roll up and down if you like. But this is what we're going to start to get a glimpse of as we move into the next decade. So as promised, we have a long time series over our industry forecast, our market data, also our consumer research. We've been at this for a long time, and this shows that time series. And often when we're looking at markets and the evolution therein, we talk about that S-curve of adoption. And if you use your mind's eye to kind of draw here along the graph, you can very clearly see that inflection point in 2006 where really we started to ramp. What happened then? That was at the dawn of that upgrade cycle. That's when prices really started to come down and we started to see earnest value in that 50-inch category, and 40-inch was even better value. So really, I think consumers' interests were peaked, and this was obviously also pre-recession, but when the recession hit, people kept buying and buying and buying. And so what's happened now? So here we are in 2017. We're right in about the middle of that replacement cycle. We just hit a new peak, a new volume peak in the U.S., almost 41 million units. Very interesting, but I think that's evidence that manufacturers are practically willing to do anything to keep those boxes moving. But as you could see from that slide, volumes over the past several years have moved up and down a little bit. I think this is part and parcel to some of the shifts in consumer behavior that we've seen watching video content. We've got some consumer research to show you in a few minutes to draw a line under that point. But really, consumers shifting those discretionary tech dollars around different devices. TV, though, as you can see from the trend, has really been one of those mainstays in the consumer tech budget. People are continuing to buy and the volume supports that. Now, moving into the future up into 2020, you'll notice that volumes are starting to trend down slightly. This is another impact, if you like, of the shift in viewing behaviors across screens. So that's a space to watch. As we enter into the next decade, will volumes continue to decrease a little bit? Or are manufacturers able to pull a proverbial rabbit out of the hat and keep those volumes pushed up? revenues. So this is an entirely different story, and you can see that the peak there in 2008, well before the volume peak in 2012. So what did it take to achieve that big volume peak of 40 million plus units in 2012? Well, the revenue piece right here tells that story. Progressively lower and lower and lower and lower prices. So this is that dynamic about the industry doing whatever it takes to keep those boxes moving. But it's been definitely at the expense of revenues. And I think this is the new normal for TV. A lot of times it's been said that TVs have become highly commoditized. Just think about the deals that you witnessed this holiday. 55-inch 4K TVs for maybe $500. So a lot of value out there. The boxes are definitely moving, but also people wouldn't be buying if they weren't interested. So I think people are inspired by a lot of the innovations that are in display. It's that centerpiece of technology. People are still very engaged with home theater and home entertainment. And I think a lot of the data that we have really supports that. So let's expand the scope to put TV more in the context of the total industry. And this really, I think, eloquently describes kind of what's been happening over the past several years in terms of that shift in purchasing and engagement as well as a function of purchasing. So notice how smartphones have really come in strongly. And today, in terms of shipment revenues, represent about 24% of the total revenue. Now, that's the US. Globally, smartphones represent about 47% of global consumer tech spending. So it's a much higher percentage, but the US is a very mature market, and so I think more of that discretionary spending is distributed across a number of devices. In emerging markets, budgets are considerably less. Consumers are having to really prioritize their purchases, and at the top of the list is a smartphone, and why not? So much utility in one device. But TV has really enjoyed a good measure of market share here, if you like, with revenue, but that's been progressively compressed by a number of factors, not the least of which is this theme of mobility: smartphones, tablets, mobile PCs. Those three items globally represent 63% of consumer tech spending globally. So that really, I think, underscores the extent to which we are thinking globally, we're thinking mobile all the time. But again, we're still attached to TVs here in America and right around the world. And we've got some more global data to show you for TVs. But this is TV in the context of consumer tech in the US. So just talking a bit more about display, you know, I talked earlier about the incredible values out there and that how we can't help ourselves as Americans. We love big screens. And this chart really, I think, describes how the screen sizes have continued to increase. And at the bottom, you can see the percentages there of the larger screen sizes, 40 inches plus, just garnering more and more and more share of the total market. And here, too, this is another function of that diffusion of content engagement across different screens. So less of a reason nowadays to buy a 27-inch or say even 32-inch TV for a bedroom. Why do I need that? I've got my tablet. I've got the Apple TV app. I have a Netflix app. I have whatever pay TV service app I can. I can watch whatever I want right on my tablet. It's a personal display. Laying in bed, so less of a need. So we're really seeing a fall off in those smaller screen sizes, and that's been happening for some time. Honestly, we saw a fairly direct correlation with the introduction in April 2010 of the iPad. We started to almost immediately see in our monthly trend shipment volume start to wane, and that's continued. So expect this trend to continue. I think we'll probably top out somewhere at 47, 48 inches on the overall whole average. But the main trend that you need to be cognizant of is the lion's share of unit volume is being driven by these larger screens. And there'll be some space left for small screens, but that just seems to be getting less and less. And so just to kind of wrap up here, I want to share with you kind of the good news trends as it pertains to revenue, some of the bad news trends. But the ugly truth is we're going to have to get used to lower revenues in this TV space here in the United States. And this is a function of declining unit volumes, progressively lower price points, but there are a variety of factors at play here. So on the good news side, you can see here, we've got positive growth in 4K, innovation within this market, HDR2, of course, you're gonna see that omnipresent on the show floor. OLED is starting to make its presence known little bit by little bit. I think OLED will be one of those undercurrents in display along with the massive presence of all kinds of various LCD technology. It's almost like LCD is like big oil. They want to squeeze every last bit of profitability out of that before they switch over to OLED. That's just my sense of it, because we continue to see so much innovation. But OLED's an expensive product to produce, so it may take some time before, given the commoditized nature of LCD. So on the negative side, we see this waning overall volume growth. That's a function of flattening sales of big screens as the smaller screens continue to decline, as I was mentioning before. So big screens moving flat to slightly negative, small screens, it all adds up to lower and lower revenue. Will OLED eventually be able to rescue this trend? Perhaps. That's why we're going to be watching this space very carefully, as we know you will be too.
Now, shifting into the audio market trends, as changing consumer consumption patterns continue to impact the home audio systems category, components which include individually sold receivers, turntables, soundbars continue to see a steady rise. The systems category, including both compact systems and home theater in a box, is expected to continue to experience double-digit decline in units. As we saw in 2016, the systems category saw 1.2 million shipments, and this incoming year in 2017, we're seeing that those shipments are going to decline to just around 1 million. And although systems are seeing a decline, overall home audio components rose 12% to $2.2 billion last year, and the category will almost rise to $2.4 billion in the coming year. We've seen quite a bit of innovation in the components category. Compared to the system category, as more advanced products such as sound bars and wireless speakers with premium sound have been introduced into the market.
And this is really good news, because what the data that we're starting to show now is should be suggesting to you, and just make a mental note, that consumers are finally starting to get the importance of audio. And one of the reasons that they're doing that is that we finally have these innovative solutions that meet consumers' needs for convenience, ease of use, and purchasing on a budget. So discrete channel audio, not really meeting a lot of those needs, but soundbars certainly do, and we've got a lot of data to prove that point and show you some of the innovation in there. But this is something we've been waiting for as an industry for a while, is for consumers, and certainly at CTA, our audio division, waiting for consumers to finally get it when it comes to audio, because historically speaking, with our consumer research, when we talk about home theater budgets, the lion's share, if not the whole share, of that budget has been put towards a display. Like I said, people can't help themselves. I want the biggest display possible. I don't care what it costs. You know, let me get that thing in my room, my living room. So, not, you know, audio has been one of these afterthoughts. But finally, now people are starting to approach the market. They're starting to get the importance of adding that immersive sound field to augment their home theater experience, and the numbers are proving that.
So as Steve mentioned, soundbars are the rock star in the home speaker space and surpassed the $1 billion mark in 2016, outperforming all other home audio components in unit sales and revenues last year. Over half of the soundbars were packaged with a subwoofer, showing that the consumers are looking to these devices as their go-to home theater solution. Taking a further look at soundbars, we're seeing continuous advances in product features. Many soundbars on the market currently have advanced features such as built-in Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and multi-room capabilities. Additionally, these soundbars are taking on sleeker appearances, as more and more include built-in subwoofers, eliminating the need for an additional piece of equipment in the home.
Yeah, that's right, Lizzie. And it's really aesthetics, isn't it? I mean, because a lot of these soundbars are quite different looking. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think the Yamaha model actually can function as a stand for that. But then with Curve TV, there are curved soundbars. So it's not just the immersive sound feel, but also the aesthetics, I think, interestingly enough.
Yeah, that's right. And on the next slide here, we can take a look that over the past 5 years, soundbars have seen almost a 20 million unit growth in American households, while traditional speakers saw an 80 million unit decline. Aesthetic needs are changing, as Steve said, among consumers. Instead of owning large systems with a multitude of speakers around the home, households are moving towards these more streamlined components, particularly due to their advanced features like connectivity, like a built-in subwoofer, surround sound.
Great. Well, let's pivot back to video technology and dig in a little bit deeper on some of these features that we see of TVs today. I said it before, and CTA Market Research is very good at demonstrating and illustrating these long-term trends over a significant time series, whether that's in years or in months. And here, we've really been able to track through our CE Market Metrics data program, our monthly shipment data tracking program, the life story of 4K TV in the United States. And it took a while for us to really build momentum. Signs of life there at the end of 2014, earnestly building in 2015, really hitting that nice holiday peak of 1.2 million units. 2016 got off to a little bit of a rocky start. I think we had some inventory in the channel for full HD, and some of the channel retailers were a little bit reticent to take new deliveries of more 4K. They needed to flush out a lot of that full HD before they took the new model lines from a number of the manufacturers. So a little bit of a rocky start in 2016, but boy, how things changed in the second half. And this we have right up through October. November was actually a new peak. So through October of 2016, very nearly 16 million units life to date have shipped in the U.S. So we're going to keep annotating this time series and updating it. But look also, as shipments ramped, how prices came down really, really fast. I think as soon as a new feature bubbles up, it seems, maybe there's 6 months, 3 months, where there's some earnest margin and profitability in that, but everybody jumps in and pushes that price down, and it's commoditized once again. So maybe we'll start to see some of these things shift with OLED, but if history is any indicator, I wouldn't be placing bets on that. So a lot of people like to compare 4K, the acceleration of 4K shipments versus HD. You know, is it happening faster? Well, of course it is. Of course it is. The ramp up in HD was entirely different, and I doubt we'll ever see that again, because we really had the 1-2 punch of a flat panel that was really awe-inspiring. I mean, people were used to these impossibly heavy and bulky tube TVs, and now they had these elegant flat panel displays, but also moving from standard definition to high definition with that little blip that we used to call enhanced definition, if anybody remembers that. That wasn't long for this world. But we're never going to see that kind of a monumental sea change in, I think, display ever again. So 4K, people are accustomed to 1080p. People have been rolling right into 4K and adopting that. And mostly this is a function of panel makers, because they've just literally, in other production lines, have just switched tracks, certainly in the large screen sizes, to 4K. And probably by holiday 2017, so the end of this year, I think you'll earnestly be hard-pressed to find a full HD 1080p set in a screen size 40 inches and above. Maybe you'll find a few. They'll be very inexpensive, but pretty much all those sets are going to click over to 4K. So let's talk forecast and just show you how quickly 4K TV is going to ramp. This slide also pairs with that HDR. So at CES 2017, these two technologies are going to be arm in arm. Last year at CES, we saw a little bit around HDR, and we, of course, we saw some of that volume start to tick through this year in tandem with 4K. But I think that this year is when you're really going to start to see more and more pairing of 4K with HDR with 4K. So we're estimating 15 million units for 4K TV shipping in the United States this year. That's 50% volume growth over 2016. And we'll continue that double-digit growth trend out through the end of the decade. So again, and this is a function, like I said before, of manufacturers just ticking over their production lines. And really, honestly speaking, I think everything manufactured from 40 inches and above is pretty much going to be 4K from this point forward. But HDR, this is again something to look for, and I think when you're looking at a display, they'll be talking about HDR, whether it's Dolby Vision or HDR10. This is something that I think is going to be interesting to see play out, is really how we message this to the consumer, because I think the consumer is only now really starting to earnestly get 4K and what that means, and because sometimes these things take a little while to seep into the consumer consciousness. Now we're coming at them with HDR, and certainly Hollywood is more enthusiastic about HDR than they are 4K. So we'll have 4K HDR Blu-ray and the players that support that, etc. So there's going to be, I think, a pretty tough job to do on the sales floor and online to explain, so what is this HDR mean and why do I need it? Because there, you will see some 4K sets, obviously, as the chart shows, that will not have HDR, at least in the display quality or the capabilities of the display, because that's the other confusing part about HDR, is that there is the display's ability to receive those signals, and then the other side of that coin is being the display being able to actually technically render that wide color gamut and that brightness that's measured in nits. And Lord help any salesperson that tries to describe nits to a customer on the floor, because they're probably going to say, what did you call me? So yeah, nits, but it's fine for us because we're industry folk, but the general consumer, I think, is going to need to sit down and focus on this to really get it, especially if they're asked to pay a premium for these HDR sets. Some global data from our research partner GfK, just to share with you to add context around 4K, about 82 million sets shipping globally. More double-digit growth here. So again, 4K is the new full HD. I mean, if you're buying a set, a large screen TV, you're going to be getting 4K almost whether you like it or not. And the good news is a lot of people say about 4K, well, where's the native content? Well, you guys know the story. I mean, we've got more and more of that coming. The same arguments were made back in the HD upgrade days. Oh, there's no content. Well, what happened? Well, the content happened. And so the same is true with 4K. And more, a lot of these sets will upgrade 1080p content to near 4K quality. So the consumer really can't lose. Connected TV, smart TV, intelligent TV, whatever label you want to put on it. This is another thing that you're probably going to get, whether you're really interested in that feature or plan to use it or not. More and more of these shipments of TVs are including smart TV. In the early days, this was very much a Me Too feature. And I think that there wasn't a lot of traction with smart TV because there were so many, the old saying goes, there's lots of ways to skin a cat. So there are a lot of ways to get over-the-top content into the living room, not just with a smart TV. You could use your game console. You could use a discrete set-top box like Apple TV. You could use a connected Blu-ray player. You had lots of different ways. And consumers were anchoring to those. And some of our research has showed that they are still tied to that, and they're not really shifting their behavior, even as the smart TV platform starts to build in more. These days, I think what you're going to see is more of a shift from entertainment to smart home, We started to see that with LG and Samsung at CES 2016, positioning the display as that kind of command center for smart home and that one place where you can kind of put it all together, that ecosystem, there's another buzzword. But I think that's where you're going to start to see a shift with smart TV. It's more than just for Netflix. And video device ownership and use. So this is where, you know, we talked about this, the TV being the centerpiece of technology. Among those that say that they watch any kind of video content, that 87% at the top, about half of them, 46%, say this is what I use for the majority of my TV viewing. Some of the, you know, used for the majority of viewing for some of these other devices, a lot less. But let's take a deeper look and just see about amongst these consumers who said, yes, device X is what I use for my principal viewing. For TV, we don't see millennials mentioned here. We see, you know, Gen Xers, baby boomers, late technology adopters, because they don't want to, you know, change is difficult. So they're like, yeah, well, wait, I don't, I'm not going to watch. Maybe they're older adults. There's no way I can see the video on that little tiny screen. I have enough trouble just dialing a phone number. So this is TV, but smartphone, when we move into mobile devices, this is where we start to see more millennials mentioned and so forth. So that degree of mobility is certainly more pronounced with the millennial crowd and those younger age cohorts. And I doubt that they will seriously continue to anchor as they grow older, as their income grows. Certainly, they'll be buying displays. But there is, and I think the millennials are part of the genesis or the progenitor of this trend. Look what's been happening with with content engagement. Okay, yeah. Before we get there, though, let's talk about content received. So this is interesting because look right in the middle. So paid video streaming services like Netflix, others, Hulu, etc., going up while content on physical disc going down. So that's the main point right there in the bullseye of this slide. Pay TV, there's a lot of discussion around cord cutting and so forth, but you know, our research data, and we're looking at this pretty much on an annual basis, doesn't necessarily support the notion that there are a lot of consumers out there who are cutting the cord. You know, pay TV services are starting to segment. We've seen some of those announcements at previous shows here at CES. But still, pay TV is the vast majority of how consumers are receiving content into their home. But what's really happening is that people are adding on top of pay TV services. Maybe it's a direct consumer HBO subscription. They've got Netflix. So they're really adding up a lot of different pipes to bring in content. And that's truly what's happening, because if you look at the onlys at the very bottom, you know, very, very small numbers indeed. So interestingly, while there's much talk about cord cutting, really the wireless and the streaming story is on the audio side of the equation. And Leslie has some more details on that. But again, let me go to the next slide and we'll talk about time spent viewing. And this is something that we've been watching for a while now. Several years ago, when I gave a presentation at Research Summit, I talked about a trend about watching more. And what that meant was we were watching on more displays, so smartphones, tablets, mobile PCs, TVs, and we're also watching more content. So it's not the same amount of content diffused across those displays. We're actually watching more, spending more time watching. And here's the evidence. Nearly 17 hours a week in 2016, according to our consumer data. That's up significantly from nearly 13 hours a week in 2011. So people are watching more. And think about your own digital experience. I know Vine is gone, but I mean, all the little video clips you see through Twitter, through YouTube, through Facebook, all the social media, I think that's a major pipeline for a lot of this. So we're earnestly watching more, and here's the data that supports that. And here's a real gem. So adding on to that diffusion of content engagement, we've got data here that really puts numbers to that and attaches some very good documentation to this trend and shift in consumer behavior. You know, we talk about the diffusion of content across different screens. I think it's going to be incredibly significant, perhaps this year, if we replicate this research, where the percent of time viewing on a TV falls below 50%. That'll be a red letter date, and very, very significant. Right now, it's almost there at 51. But how things have changed, in the home entertainment landscape, we're no longer obliged just when we want to watch TV, you know, to come home and plop down on the sofa and click on the TV. You know, TV itself, you know, when I was a young man, we used to, you know, talk about TV. We meant going and watching a TV, that device. Now people say, I'm going to watch TV. It could be watching video on any device. So even that, and if you need evidence for that, look no further than your iPhone and the fact that Apple changed the video app, and it's now called TV. Right?
Yeah. Now diving into the consumer behavior around audio. So the shift from obtrusive trends, like we mentioned earlier, in audio to unobtrusive aesthetics is translating through to ownership in U.S. households. More households are going from complex, discrete audio products to simpler products such as wireless speakers and soundbars. This can also be attributed to consumers connecting and viewing content, as Steve just mentioned, on more than just TV screens. So who is owning discrete channel audio? 9% of self-reported U.S. households own a combination of a pair of speakers, subwoofer, center channel speakers, and AV speakers with surround sound. Within this group of consumers, there's more than just dedicated home theater rooms using discrete channel audio, as more than 60% own a television with a screen size of less than 60 inches. As seen in consumer research we conducted earlier in 2016, a lot of these folks are late tech adopters, as well as those owning their systems much longer, typically 5 years or longer. And so when shopping for home theater audio systems, consumers rank connectivity features within three groups: maintaining connections through wireless capabilities like Wi-Fi enabled and Bluetooth capabilities, and then also traditional wired connectivity such as USB connections and number of HDMI inputs, and finally the support for legacy features. AirPlay enabled is interesting and coming in at the bottom at 15%, most likely because consumers aren't necessarily educated about AirPlay enabled branding and connectivity. And also built-in streaming services is at 42%. That's still relatively high, but we think that it's coming in lower on this list because when folks are thinking about streaming devices or streaming services, they're using their smartphone or tablets to do so, which is ranking high on this list.
Yeah, that's right, Leslie. And AirPlay, I mean, we see a similar dynamic in car audio where CarPlay and Android Auto, there's not as much mind share there, and we see this echoed in the home entertainment arena as well. So people are more cognizant and they're picking more up on the mainstays of connectivity labels like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. So that's just to make that point.
So portable connected solutions such as wireless speakers and headphones are topping the purchase intent list among non-owners of these devices. Wireless headphones and speakers were 2016 in-demand audio products with the lowest consumer interest around discrete channel audio such as center channel speakers like we mentioned earlier.
And this is really significant. You should be paying attention to this because it's not just people who are initiated, you know, to these products. It's, you know, entirely new buyers are saying, I want wireless. So it's not people who upgraded to iPhone 7 and said, okay, I don't want to use this goofy adapter, I better get some wireless headphones. It's people who are entirely uninitiated. They don't own this product before. They're already starting to look for wireless. So wireless is a huge, huge theme in audio now, and you should be paying attention to that. And you're going to see a lot of these solutions out there.
So Bluetooth components are increasingly more popular in U.S. households. Both Bluetooth wireless headphones and enabled speakers have seen almost a 10 percentage point increase in household penetration from 2015 to 2016. So who's purchasing wireless headphones and speakers? More than half are buyers with household incomes of less than $50,000, mostly due to the less expensive product availability in this space. It's an attainable tech solution for a lot of consumers. Households also own more than one unit, as we see different products for different activities like fitness, like sports, focused technology, as well as lots of other innovation in this category.
And let's just hold there on this slide, because two numbers I think are going to grow. The overall installed base, well, actually three. So the total household penetration, the total installed base, but also the average units per household, the density. So I think we'll grow the market organically with Bluetooth speakers, but also you're going to see the density also increase. And why not? I mean, you can get a really nice Bluetooth speaker for about $49. You can also get a nice Bluetooth speaker for $499. But there's a lot of price points, there's a lot of segmentation. Bluetooth speakers were omnipresent on the show floor a few years ago. Some might say that that was a function of Apple's switch to the Lightning connector that basically made obsolete all those speaker docks. And that opened the gates for opportunity with Bluetooth. Why not connect wirelessly? And consumers responded. So probably that same dynamic is going to happen again with wireless headphones.
So as Steve mentioned, here are some of the trends that we're seeing in wireless headphones. There's vast competition in feature qualities that are causing varied price points across the board. There's also more customization and further compatibility with other products such as smartphones. So again, as Steve's mentioned, look for these products on the show floor this year. They're definitely going to be prevalent. Regarding headphones overall, 63% of U.S. households indicate they own headphones of any kind, with an average of two pairs per household. With wireless on the rise, almost a third both own both wireless and wired products. And so as audio trends advance, such as adoption of high-res audio, there are two types of consumers who have the highest purchase potential for these products and also make up over three-fourths of the audio tech spend. The first are audiophiles. So audiophiles are the audio experts, and they're passionate about audio. They want that clean and crisp technical sound, almost like they're in the studio.
The usual suspects.
That's right. And although they make up only 15% of the market, they do make up 56% of the audio tech spend each year. They spend roughly about $2,000 on audio-specific products each year. The second segment of consumers are music enthusiasts or emotional music lovers. Now, these folks are the ones that want to feel a connection to the music. They want to feel like they're at the concert engaging with that artist or band. They make up about a third of the market, but they do make over a quarter of the audio tech spend. So again, overall, both of these two segments make up three-fourths of the audio tech spend.
Yeah, and let's hold right here, because we've talked a lot about this with CTA members in the audio space, and the endeavor with this consumer research was really to identify these consumer segments, because we certainly don't need to market to the audiophile, because they're going to buy our solutions just on principle. I mean, they're into audio. They don't care how much it costs. But we wanted to get to who is that segment behind those audiophiles, and that's where the music enthusiasts come in. And as Leslie was showing you, while there's less of a wallet share, they're not willing to spend as much as an audiophile. They're every bit as much enthusiastic about the audio content. Maybe less about the technology. They don't care about having a tube-based amplifier that, you know, obviously costs $10,000. But these consumers are who we're taking aim at when we think about high-res audio and new opportunities in audio, or these music enthusiasts. And that's really the opportunity therein to expand and grow that market. And it's essential that brands do so that are competing in these spaces, because we've been down this path before, or around the block before, with SACD and DVD audio, other high-res audio formats. And obviously, you know the tale, the tape. We really haven't seen a lot of traction there. So Will high-res audio today suffer that same fate? Well, potentially, if we're not able to engage these music enthusiasts.
So what are some trends you're going to see out the show floor this year?
Yeah, for display, I've already described several of them. I talked about LCD, kind of like big oil, squeezing every bit of profitability and technological possibilities out of that technology. I think the Samsung QLED is a really good example of this. They had SUHD. I think a lot of this stuff adds up to somewhat contributing to some consumer confusion. Like, so what does that mean? And all these fancy labels and so forth. Maybe we'll see some new introductions in OLED. That's one of the things I'll personally be looking for, because that really is a quantum leap in technology innovation when it comes to display. But hey, LCD, full credit, some amazing display quality there with the innovations that our video engineers are able to implement into those pixels and subpixels of subpixels. I talked about 4K and HDR really arm in arm, and also the repositioning of TV around smart TV. I think that's going to be a trend. But also look for the early signs of that next-gen display, that season 4 that I talked about, with foldable and flexible displays, 8K resolution. We'll probably see a lot of these advanced prototypes here at the show, as we have in past, but each year they get a little bit better, and we get closer to coming to market. And who knows, we may get a view to when some of these will be made available. Will it be 2017? I can't wait to find out.
So in terms of the audio trends, expect to see more wireless earbuds and headphones at the show this year, as well as products with built-in high-res audio and true immersive sound. And as we saw on last year's CES, we saw some of the traditional tech taking on these more advanced features, such as vinyl turntables able to transfer vinyl tracks into high-res audio tracks. You'll also see much more in the all-in-one component space, such as soundbars and other devices that are going to allow consumers to have that aesthetic appeal in their home.
This is just one of the major narratives here, and I just want to accentuate this point, is that a lot of people talk about cord cutting in video, but the real cord cutting is in audio. That's really what you need to know. Make a mental note. The real cord cutting is in audio. People are going wireless all the way. On the video side, we saw the data, not so much. So, thank you for attending our session on the home entertainment landscape. We have a little bit of time remaining, as I said before, and we have some mics positioned if there are any questions. It's a little bit hard for us to see past about the 10th row from the lights, so if anyone has a question, we'd be delighted to provide an answer. Just step up to the mic and introduce yourself, give your name and your company name.
And additionally, this presentation will be available to download through the CES app if you haven't downloaded that app already.
Yep, and if you want to reserve a question in the form of an email, that's fine, or a tweet. My Twitter's on there. Mm-hmm. Any questions? There, that's a little bit better. We have a mic back there, and we have a mic up here. Who would like to ask a question? Thank you, sir. A prize for this gentleman. Just give us your name and your company, please.
My name is Sam, and I'm a venture capitalist. I pretty much spend a lot of time looking at those voice recognition personal assistant. For example, Amazon Echo has been like pretty popular. But I don't see much discussion around that. I have the vision that probably over the long term, probably in the home, people will spend a lot of time interacting with those like smart devices, and some of them actually will be like sound bar, like audio systems. So I would love to pick up your brain to slightly share your vision about that, how this kind of a smart devices will become like more intelligent in the future.
Sure.
Thank you.
So thank you for the question. It's a good one. And so I think that while today there's a lot of buzz around digital assistants, and there are a number of innovative products in that category at the show. It's not just Google Home and Amazon Echo with Alexa and so forth. There's a product called Ollie that uses AI to determine just exactly how do you like to interact with the device. You know, are you a mean person or are you a nice person, I guess? So it'll talk back, and talk rough to me, you know, or whatever. But I have no idea, but I can't wait to see it. But what we've seen in the past, and I think a lot of you would agree with me, is sometimes products start out as a feature, rather. A new innovative feature starts out as a product, but then that just gets rolled in more as a feature. I would say TiVo is probably the poster child for this, is for DVR, which is now, you know, baked into to so many other things video-wise. So it could be that we see that digital assistant, because a lot of that is software driven. You really need a microphone, a speaker. Obviously a soundbar has got the speakers. So if you can have that connectivity and tying back to some cloud-based system with AI, I could totally see how they would start to build that in. So you're not obliged to have an Echo, say, in each room. Yeah, very good question. Are there any others? At the back of the room, I do see you, yes. Thank you for waving. Just give us your name and company, please.
Jamie Gold, Kitchen and Bath Design News.
Great.
And I've been seeing people putting TVs in medicine cabinets and mirrors, just installed in bathrooms and installed in other potentially wet environments like outdoor spaces. What are you seeing coming up for those clientele?
Well, I would say that some of that behavior may be shifting to like a tablet. I mean, that was certainly the case with rear seat entertainment and vehicles. A $1,500 solution in the form of headrest DVD players and monitors was completely made obsolete by a $15 bracket for an iPad. And because you can just download all the movies you want onto it, and the kids can go crazy, and you know, you don't have to keep up with any discs. So there could be some of that. I mean, the shipment data and our forecast thereof really don't support, you know, growing shipments of smaller displays that might be put in some of those applications and environments that you described. Outdoor display, very niche market. Yes, there's some of that. Luxury homes in abundance with outdoor kitchens and things. There certainly will be niche innovation, I think, in those categories, but also there may be some pivoting to other devices such as tablets, opposed to, you know, buying yet another TV and cutting for having a cutout in the mirror or the wall. Another good question. Are there more? Right. Any other questions? We have just a few minutes remaining. Okay, yeah, we have a gentleman who has raised his hand. He's going to the mic. You almost need sunglasses up here, yeah. Don't you, Leslie?
Tom Webb, TAW Global. You mentioned earlier in the presentation that consumers are beginning to respect audio more. My question is, with the prices of TV, you know, TV's prices are dropping, mm-hmm. Are they respecting audio more, or are they looking around with more dollars in their pocket and deciding, what do I want to buy next? And just adding more audio as the next step because they have more dollars?
Yeah, well, I think more dollars is debatable. But yeah, a fair point. And I think, you know, respect is a really good word. I think that consumers have satisfied the need earnestly with bigger screens, now with 4K for the video. So they're starting to say, so what else? But really, I think it's been that soundbar that some have said is kind of a messiah for home audio, because it's really meeting that consumer demand. Very few consumers, and this is going back to the genesis of the DTV upgrade days when we were looking at the home theater budget equation, very, very few consumers were willing to say, okay, I'm going to spend half on my TV and half on a discrete audio system. We didn't have soundbars back then. So moving forward in time, enter soundbars, and now you can get all the benefits of discrete channel audio with less than half the fuss and certainly less than half the price. So I think that's what's pulling people in. Is it like, well, I don't have to spend as much on the TV so I can afford audio? Maybe in some cases, but I think more it's just that we now finally have these solutions that deliver a tremendous amount of value. And a lot of them, as Leslie was showing you on the slide, are paired with displays. So it has that aesthetically pleasing quality. And I think that's the real function. More, a lot of retailers are starting to pair these up in bundles, so you're getting them as part of that. But as the gentleman asked the question about digital assistants, I think more and more features, we showed you how more and more features are building into soundbars. It's just adding up to an incredible amount of value, and I think that's what's reeling in the consumer and the light bulbs going off and say, hey, it's time for us to get a soundbar, and our movies are going to sound better, and we're going to enjoy more of the entertainment that we have on that 65-inch 4K TV. Good question, though.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? Great. Well, thank you, guys. If there are other questions, please feel free to get in touch. We can have our contact information on the screen again, just for everyone's benefit. And enjoy CES. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.